Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO, and joining us on the program today is Philip Kerr. He's written a new novel in his series featuring Bernie Gunther, and this one is called Field Gray. He joins us by telephone from New York City. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Vic. Thanks.
You don't come over here on tour very much, do you?
I don't. No, they don't let me. I'm obviously, yeah, I'm a very expensive guy to look after, you know. Although I'm satisfied with, you know, the basics in life. You know, the best is usually quite good enough, but they don't seem to sort of want to have me more often. So, you know, I'm glad to be here though. So.
Well, every time one of your books comes out, I look to see if you're touring, and this time I didn't get my hopes up. I looked through and I said, oh my, he's actually going to be over here for a week. I have a chance to interview him. I love this series. Every time one of your books comes out, I drop everything else I'm doing.
Oh, thanks. That's really kind.
I love this character. Tell us how you came up with the idea for him.
Well, it's quite a long time ago now. I mean, I first started writing these books in the mid-1980s, and I'd done a postgraduate degree in German legal philosophy, which is about as recherché as you could probably get. But I got interested in the whole phenomenon of Nazism when I was studying German jurisprudence. And I guess I probably always wanted to sort of write about it. I mean, really, for the simple reason I always wanted to ask myself how it happened and what would I have done in similar circumstances. And really, the character in the beginning was a kind of was a way of doing that. He's a kind of everyman character, and it's usually just a way of me trying to sort of answer some pretty basic questions about what I would have done if I'd been living in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, how I would have behaved. Just to sort of try and identify with the common man, you know, and the dilemma that he would have found himself with.
In these books, you employ extensive use of flashbacks, and while I really enjoy what Bernie is up to at the time, which right now I think is about 1954 that you've gotten up to, I really enjoy what he's up to now or in the present. But the flashbacks are really what I live for, because we find out so much about him. This guy who was a detective in the Berlin police, and then he became a hotel detective, and then he's gone all these strange places. Like, you took him to Argentina for a book a couple of books ago, and we have these flashbacks where in that particular book, he finds out there's a serial killer that has an eerie similarity of someone he investigated in Germany, and you take us back and forth through time, and that is so much fun.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
I do. And in this one, we get to go back to his days in World War II, and this is what I, as a reader, have been waiting for, because I've always wondered what happened when he was in the war.
Yes. Well, you see, when I originally wrote these books, I mean, I wrote three in the sort of early 1990s, and then I stopped for quite a few years. I think there's a 16-year gap between book three and book four. And the great advantage of coming back after such a long period of time is that I'm writing about an older character who's lived, some of his life is decidedly shady and embarrassing and painful, and it's also quite intriguing to be able to deal with the idea of memory and what a character chooses to remember and chooses to admit to having done. And so that was really one of the really interesting things was to deal with the idea of an unreliable narrator.
I think my favorite moment in this entire book is when he's flashing back. Well, he's actually being interrogated, and he's talking to his interrogators about what happened during the war. And he's in a Soviet camp. He's a German POW, and he's asked to investigate a murder. And when he goes into the hut and sees the piece of bread and the vodka and the cigarettes, That's my favorite moment, because you say, and now he can finally feel like a detective.
Yes. Well, I'd always wanted to deal with his time in a Soviet prisoner of war camp. But for a long time, I was unable to find any sources. I mean, that's always been one of the difficult things about writing these books, is and partly why I wrote about a detective in the first place. There was just such a very small amount of information that was available in the beginning, and that was certainly true of life for a German prisoner of war in a Soviet camp. And it took me ages to sort of track down sort of memoirs of Germans who'd actually been in Soviet prisoner of war camps. I guess really that's where the internet's been helpful. You know, it's sort of to track down some of these sources has been difficult. But like I say, in the beginning, it was detective work, just to find out, you know, the name of a street in Berlin, because, you know, over the course of 100 years, one street in Berlin might have had 4 or 5 different names.
Mm.
When I first set out to write about Berlin, that was really all I wanted to do, was just write about Berlin. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized I was actually behaving like a detective. In the way I was sort of going about looking for information, and that was kind of what gave me the idea of choosing a detective to write about, and in order to write about the period.
Philip Kerr joins us. His new novel is called Field Gray, and he's on book tour in the U.S. A rare event. And you must have just got there, because I see you have a signing tomorrow in New York. You must have just arrived.
Yes, I got here yesterday.
Okay. Well, I have been reading this series for a while, and I must say that when I'm reading it, I noticed that he's got this incredible eye for beautiful women. And this...
Yes, of course, that's something I share myself.
Okay. So you are this. There is an element of autobiography here.
A large element of wishful thinking as well, actually, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, I understand that your background is in a different kind of writing, that you were in advertising.
Oh, yes, I was in advertising for a long time. I was a terrible advertising man. I was a copywriter, and you know, I was terrible largely because I was spending a lot of my time writing my novel. When I was in the advertising agency business, there was a lot of time available to write a commercial, and I could usually write them in about an hour on a Monday, and that would give me the whole rest of the week. And I could sort of just, you know, pull my novel out of the drawer. And as long as I was typing something, I guess they were pretty happy. But most of the time, I was just writing my novel. I mean, the advertising taught me one good thing, and that was to be able to take criticism without sort of losing my temper.
Oh.
So, and that's been very, very useful when dealing with sort of people in Hollywood.
The book that preceded this one was set in Cuba, and Bernie is hiding out, and he's living under an assumed name, and he's hanging out with American mobsters in the early 50s. And this is during that incredibly corrupt period in Cuba, right before Fidel's revolution. Then as we open this new book, he's decided it's time to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a beautiful woman with him, and he gets on board a ship and tries to get out of there. And then he spends the rest of the book pretty much as a captive. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, he goes from, I think there are 5 different kinds of prison that he finds himself in. There's an American prison. There's a war crimes prison in Germany called Landsberg. There's the Soviet prisoner of war camp, of course. It's a novel about sort of incarceration and what happens to someone and how they think back over their life during a period of incarceration.
I thought it was particularly twisted when you had him occupy Hitler's cell.
Well, yeah, I mean, the prison, Landsberg prison, is still a working prison in Germany, and there are still prisoners who are locked up in there. Now, I don't happen to know what if there's a convict around at the moment who's currently occupying Hitler's cell. I do know that Hitler enjoyed his time in there. He put it to very good use. They treated him like an honored guest. And he wrote Mein Kampf while he was in there. I would very much like to have gone in and seen inside the prison myself, but it's not actually open to the public anymore. In Hitler's day, it was. After he became Reichschancellor, it was perfectly possible to go in and visit this place, this cell where he'd written the book, almost like a kind of pilgrimage.
It was like a shrine.
Yes, it was.
Is it true that there's an excellent view from that cell?
There is. They made sure that Hitler had a fine view. He had a better cell than everybody else. I wouldn't have been at all surprised if he'd had, if his jailer had actually been a servant as much as anything. No, there was nothing that he really lacked except his freedom.
The moral dilemmas that Bernie encounters pervade this series, and serving under the Nazis was very difficult for him because he did not sympathize with that regime.
Yes.
Yet he had to survive somehow. The ambiguity this creates is delicious.
Well, you have to remember that not everybody who worked for the Nazis was indeed a Nazi. It was perfectly possible to be involved in the whole thing and not actually be a party member. And Bernie Gunter's dilemma is that he's a Democrat, a social Democrat. He was opposed to the Nazis, but because he's good at his job, he's a good detective, then they make it difficult for him not to do what they ask, which is to be a good detective, someone who's not motivated by politics. And in the case of murder, someone who's not going to sort of pin a crime on the first person who comes along. And that makes a fantastic sort of drama. The great thing about writing this character for me is that I get to write, on the face of it, fairly small-scale murder mystery stories or crime stories, which are happening in the foreground. But in the background is a sort of immense crime which is going on, and that makes for sort of almost operatic levels of drama, I think. And that's a real luxury, I think, for a writer to be able to do that. I mean, when Chandler wrote Philip Marlowe, he didn't really have that sort of luxury. I mean, most of the crimes he was describing were sort of like corrupt sort of district attorneys and dodgy mayors. And there was no sense of anything worse than that sort of happening off stage, as it were. But this writing about the Nazis, of course, that's there's no such problem. And of course, the other great thing is that Chandler used to say, when he ran out of ideas, he'd have a guy walk through the door with a gun in his hand. Well, in my case, I'm able to bring on a character from real life, a Nazi, like sort of Heydrich or Himmler or someone like that, who's infinitely more villainous than any villain I could create myself.
A couple of books ago, when he went to Argentina, you had him leaving Europe in the company of some real Nazi war criminals. In fact, he was disguised as one himself.
Yes. And
that gave him great cover when he got to Argentina.
Yes.
You also have done extensive research. You mentioned how you really didn't have the information to write about being a German POW until recently, and looking at the back of this book, the text that you refer to, it sounds like you just did an immense amount of research.
I always try to. Mainly because I think if there's information there, obviously I'd like to get hold of it and read about it. I sort of feel it's my job to sort of get the facts right whenever I can. I mean, which is not to say I don't make mistakes. I do make mistakes, but usually people don't know when I've made a mistake. So I'm quite fortunate. I like small details. You see, I'm a bit like one of those sort of French impressionist painters. They put very tiny little spots of color on a painting, one at a time, and up close they don't mean very much. But when you take 20 or 30 steps back, then the picture all starts to sort of make sense. So, I go out of my way to find those little nuggets of information, because I think that it's the small things that help sort of bring a period and a place to life, not the big things.
So it'd be like one of those little Russian cigarettes. It's only got two or three puffs in it.
Yes. I know, it's fantastically, well, it's a fantastic little metaphor of Russia itself. You know, they don't taste very nice. They've only got a couple of puffs in them. They look better than they are. Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic metaphor for what Russia was like then.
Hmm. Philip Kerr joins us. His new Bernie Gunther novel is Field Gray. You've mentioned Raymond Chandler a couple of times there. They like to compare you to Raymond Chandler. Are you looking forward to going to Los Angeles this week?
Well, I must say, I mean, I go to Los Angeles quite a lot, and it's hard to see the Los Angeles of Raymond Chandler there. I think it's easier at night, actually, I must say, when things are slightly sort of sleazier. When you drive, up near the Chateau Marmont, I will start to feel the sort of spirit of Chandler sort of creeping down the hill, as it were. I mean, the thing I love most about Chandler is the sort of wit and the sense of humor and the fantastic concoctions of description. And they're like sort of wonderfully elaborate ice cream sundaes. Mm. But the great thing is that at the end of it, he always puts a little cherry on the top, which is a joke.
Uh-huh.
And it makes the business of actually having something described to you, which can be sometimes rather excruciating and boring, it makes it sort of entertaining. And that's what I love about his writing. It's so descriptive, but it's also entertaining. And it's something I've set myself to do.
What other kind of books do you like to read?
Well, I read an awful lot of history, obviously, quite often. A lot of it to do with the period I'm writing about. I don't read an awful lot of crime novels, mainly because it's not that I don't like other people's crime novels. It's just that I like to work in a vacuum in a way. I like to sort of get on with my own thing and not be too influenced by what other people are doing. So I don't read a huge amount of novels. In fact, to be honest, I don't read an awful lot at all because, I spend most of my day writing. And when I've sort of finished, when I knock off at about 6 o'clock, I'm sort of pretty exhausted, really, and I kind of want to do what everyone else does, you know, which is kind of collapse in front of the TV and watch football.
Mm.
So I don't read as much as I should or could, and I'm always promising myself to read more. But when I do read, it's mostly sort of history or biography.
I try never to read a book review before I read a book because I don't want to have my book spoiled by finding out something.
I hate that.
It drives
people
me
give
crazy.
Stuff away.
Yeah.
Yeah, they give stuff away, you know, and they think somehow, you know, that's permissible.
I have not read them, but I understand that you also have written some YA books.
Oh, yes.
Young adult books under the name of P.B. Kerr.
That's right. Yes, I have.
Well, tell us about those.
Well, I wrote those because in the beginning, my children, you see, were wondered what I did all day. You know, they'd see me sitting in front of a computer and sometimes with a computer game or something, and they'd think that was my day. And in order to kind of connect with them, I started writing children's books so that at least they would actually be able to connect with what I did. And I always assumed that it would be one of the most difficult kinds of writing that there was, and I think that helped, actually. It always helps to sort of think of it as not being that you're writing down for kids, that it's actually somehow more difficult. It's a bit like sort of, Matisse painting a wonderfully simple abstract picture. You've kind of got to abandon all that you know in order to do that. You've got to abandon sophistication and the ability to draw something beautifully in order to do it really simply, like a child. And I think the same is true of writing for children. I think it's a business of doing away with what makes one an adult. And for me, the exciting part is sort of getting in touch with my inner 12-year-old.
Mm.
And it's like being Peter Pan. It's like finding my sort of youth again. And that's one of the reasons I like doing it. It's exciting, and it's very liberating as well.
What was it that got you to bring back Bernie Gunther after such a long period? You really weren't planning to do that, were you?
Well, I mean, I sort of, when I stopped after three, I thought, well, you know, I didn't sign on when I became a writer just to write the same thing for the rest of my life. And I wanted to explore other things. And it wasn't that I didn't think I'd ever write another Bernie Gunther novel. It was just simply that I wanted to write other stuff as well. So, whenever I wrote that stuff and I would go away on a book tour or you know, I'd go to a bookshop and do a signing or something, and people would say, you know, when are you going to write another Bernie Gunther novel? And in the beginning, I didn't really know. And then finally, I thought, well, you know, I'd better do it while people are still asking. But at the same time, I kind of think, what a fantastic sort of luxury it is to be able to do that, to be able to come back to a character after sort of 15 or 16 years, because most writers either kill the guy off or milk it to death, you know, until people are sort of completely fed up with it. So I've been lucky, I think. You know, it's a rare thing to sort of come back to a character after a long period of time. But that's pretty much why, you know. But also I thought I could have insights into the character as an older man that would make it sort of interesting. And I thought, well, you know, the only way I can justify doing it is if I sort of mix it up a bit. If I take him to places that he hasn't been, and you know, such as Cuba and Argentina. I'd always wanted to write a novel about Nazis in Argentina, what they were doing there, and you know, the kind of society. Did they have a society? Did they see each other for coffee and all that kind of thing? And there were indeed a remarkably large number of them who were there. So that seemed like, you know, very high on the list of one of the things that I wanted to do with the character.
Philip Kerr joins us. His new novel is Field Gray. Am I going to be able to look forward to another Bernie Gunther book in about a year, or am I going to have to suffer?
No, there will be another one in a year's time, which will be set in Prague, in 1941, Berlin and Prague in 1941.
Really? So he's still flashing back from the mid-50s, or...?
Well, this one, I thought to myself, well, you know, there's no need for me necessarily to explain, you know, why I'm writing something which is 1941, 1942, and I'll just write it as a straight story from 1941, 1942, and then, you know, people can make their own minds up whether that was a good idea or not. It just seemed to me that, you know, there were now sufficiently large number of people who knew about the character that I wouldn't really have to explain why I was doing it. I made a few allusions to that period in other books. So I thought, well, you know, this is like filling in another gap, but without the top and tail of a more contemporary setting.
I can't wait.
Thank you.
Is the book finished?
The first draft is, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of rewriting it even as we speak. But, I mean, you know, it was a good excuse to go to Prague, really,
nice.
Which is one of the most interesting places in Europe.
So you can actually write when you're on book tour?
Well, I can rewrite, put it that way. I mean, okay. I've got my sort of half of my manuscript with me and my laptop, so I can but yeah, I mean, to be honest, I can write anywhere. You know, I can I usually just have a notebook and a pencil and a rubber. That's all you need as a hobby, and that's probably why I started it, because, you know, my parents were Scots and they were kind of poor, and it's a fantastic hobby to start when you've got no money, when you're mean and you don't want to spend anything, and so I mean that's still the way I do it now.
So you're a Scot?
Yes.
I interviewed a Scot the other day, Ian Rankin.
Oh, I know Ian, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he on tour? Or?
He did come through here about a month ago. In fact, I think you're kind of on the same tour, because he also did Murder by the Book in Houston.
Ah, right, right. Oh, he's a great lad, Ian.
A laddie.
Well, we're from the same city. We're both from Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
He just lives there and I don't, and he sounds like a proper Scot, and I don't either. So,
what is it about Edinburgh? We interviewed another author who is living there, but I think she's English, Kate Atkinson.
Oh, yeah.
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 What is it about Edinburgh? Is it the water?
I can tell you exactly what it is, actually. It's Edinburgh is a place that encourages you to want to get away from it. and it's and when I was a kid, the quickest and cheapest and easiest way to get away from it was to get away from it on the pages of a story I'd created. It's a city which is full of rather sort of narrow-minded people. They like to think of themselves as sort of urban sophisticates, but really they're not, actually. And so I think there's something about the Edinburgh character that encourages a double life. I mean, if you look at sort of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, really that's about being a writer, because, you know, it's about having a respectable job, being Dr. Jekyll during the daytime, and then in the evening sitting down in front of your novel and doing what you want, and in a sense behaving as Mr. Hyde does. This seems to me a perfect description of the life of a writer, and more especially the life of an Edinburgh writer.
I think it's easy to forget how many great books Robert Louis Stevenson wrote in such a short period of time.
Absolutely. And yet, don't forget, he couldn't have actually put more distance between himself and Edinburgh than he did, dying on the island of Samoa, which was at the very opposite end of the world. I think... I think lots of Edinburgh writers get away from Edinburgh. It's a mindset, you see, that it's quite limiting, I think, in some ways. It's sort of, Edinburgh people are terribly worried about what other people think of them, as the respectability, the kind of Miss Jean Brodie respectability of Edinburgh is kind of stifling. And so I think I've got another great friend who's from Edinburgh, who's a writer called Irvin Welsh. And Irvin now lives in Chicago.
Hmm.
so, I mean, I think he felt he had to get away from the place, too. So,
Philip, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thanks, Vic.
My guest has been Philip Kerr, and his new Bernie Guenther novel is Field Gray. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. Back in 1996, Melissa Faye Green visited the Book Nook to talk about her book, A Temple Bombing. And she told us about growing up in Dayton, Ohio. She lives in Atlanta now, and she's become quite a well-known writer over the years. She's just published a very personal memoir called No Biking in the House Without a Helmet. Melissa Faye Green and her husband have 9 children. After they had 4 on their own, they decided to begin adopting children. And first they adopted a boy from Bulgaria. Then they went on and adopted 4 more kids from Ethiopia. This is a fascinating memoir about what that experience was all about for Melissa Faye Green and her family. It's No Biking in the House Without a Helmet. It's a story about adoption and a lot of other things, including a little bit of channeling of Irma Bombeck. That's the Book Nook on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.